All right, I'm here with Michael Woodbridge, who's the treasurer of the London Forum, and I'm hoping he's going to talk to me a little bit about an experience he had about 43 years back when he found himself in a Soviet prison with a 15-month prison sentence. Well, it may even have been longer, but hopefully we'll get to the details of this now. Anyway, so welcome, Michael, and where do you think we should begin with the story?
Well, I started travelling with my American cousin, Frank, from Britain across to Germany, and we flew to Berlin, and from Berlin we intended to then go off and explore southern part of Germany, Bavaria in particular. But to get across at that time from Berlin to southern Germany, to Bavaria, we had to get a visa. And so, because Berlin at that time was split into two, and we had East Germany, East Berlin, and West Berlin. And to get, we flew to West Berlin, and we took a trip into East Berlin to get a visa, so we had permission to travel across the Eastern Territory to the other part of West Germany, which was, as I say, was Bavaria.
And how long after the war was that?
Well, this was in 1970, so you can say 25 years.
25 years. So they'd had 25 years under Soviet rule.
Thereabouts. Yes. I think it was 1948 that was consolidated as two sections, East and West Berlin.
Did they have the wall up then?
No, the wall was built in 1962, I believe.
So the wall was up before. Was the wall there when you were there?
Or, oh, yes, no? Sorry, yes, it was there then. Yes.
Right, okay. Was Stalin still around at that time?
No, but Stalin died, I believe, in 1956.
1956.
I might be wrong there, but it was about 56, the 50s anyway.
What do you remember the west side of Berlin being like at that time, before we move into the east side?
A bit garish, Americanized. There was always a difference between the West Germans, which I had already noted on various previous experiences. They had a much more materialistic view of life, and what I could see of these Germans, they were more rural, more, in a funny way, more conservative, you might say, even though they were in a communist state, they had a sort of more old-fashioned way of life.
And had you been to West Germany quite a few times before this?
Yes. So I'd spent some time in Cologne as, I suppose you could say, as a language student in 1962.
There's been quite a few changes there since then, in the last 50 years or so, I guess.
Yes.
What happened when you went for the visa then?
Well, I went with my American cousins. I say we'd flown over to West Berlin, and I think the name of the airport was Tegel Airport, and we went over to West Berlin. We then decided we had to go to East Berlin to get our visa, so we could have permission to cross the territory through East Germany to West Germany again, because Berlin then was an island. It was isolated. So West Berlin was isolated and sort of heart of East Germany at the time. Anyway, we...
So you had to cross through Berlin to get through to the other... So you were in West Germany and you needed to go through the East German part of Berlin to get to more West Germany.
Exactly.
Oh, I didn't know that.
We had to go from... If you could imagine, West Berlin was an island in the middle of East Germany. We'd flown to West Berlin, and to get back from that island to dry land, if you like, in West Germany, we had to travel through East German territory, yes.
Okay. So what happened when you went for your visa?
Well, my American cousin was... bit like me at the time, a bit of a tearaway, and he'd been associated with something which was called the American National Socialist White People's Party. Now he'd been to their headquarters or outlet, and he'd got some stickers, and amongst the stickers were Hitler was right with swastikas on it. And I thought all this was a great joke. After all, I was only in my early 20s and almost as stupid then as I am now. And I just thought it was all a big joke. Mind you, I was sympathetic to that point of view, but not a committed National Socialist or anything like that. But not at that time, anyway. I might have got more like that later. I was, in fact, a member of the National Front at the time. I joined the National Front in 1968, but I'd been a National Front member for about 2 years. Anyway, that's all beside the point here. We'd gone to East Berlin to get our visa. I can't remember the exact details of getting our visa. We must have gone to some sort of office there and came back. But my cousin, in his wisdom, thought it might be fun to stick these Hitler was right stickers on the local bus stops and toilets and so on. Which is just as well as one does, you know, normal other tourists take photographs. We left National Socialist stickers all around, or at least he did. Mm. I just sort of felt a bit embarrassed and amused by it all.
And this was in East Germany.
East
Berlin.
Yes, because we couldn't get out of East Berlin at that stage. We had to go back to West Berlin before we could travel across East Germany to get to West Germany. It's all. I hope that doesn't sound too complicated. Anyway, we this is what happened. Yeah. So anyway, we got our visa, I believe, and we went back by underground, U-Bahn, underground, back to Friedrichstrasse, and my cousin thought, "Yes, this is fun. I'll stick a Hitler was right sticker on a poster of Lenin." There was a picture of Lenin addressing the crowds with his finger, waving his finger at the crowds, and they're all looking up at him in awe with their little flat proletarian caps at this great communist leader. And on the end of Lenin's finger in the Friedrichstrasse propaganda poster was Hitler was right. And and this even amused the staff CEO guards when they interviewed me about it later. But anyway, so that's what he did. That was the prank. It just so happens I had his passport in my pocket, and I didn't even know quite what he got up to. I was a little bit embarrassed, both felt a mixture of embarrassment and amusement, and stupidity, no doubt, because I didn't take anything too seriously in those days. And so I thought, well, perhaps they haven't discussed, perhaps he hadn't stuck this thing on. I didn't notice at the time he had on the poster. I know he was thinking about it, or had even intended to do it, but maybe they're just asking him for his passport. So I went up, gave him the passport. The policeman snatched the passport from me, took my own, and marched us off to an interrogation centre in a place called Hohenschönhausen, which was the main East German interrogation centre at the time.
Wow, so you'd be putting these stickers up beforehand, just sort of all over the place, and then you got to the station and
just on the way out, yeah.
And he saw the ideal,
last final blast.
The ideal spot, which was the big poster of Lenin. Was that the focal point of the station, was the big picture of Lenin?
In the underground, yes, one of the big underground chambers, yes.
And the staff, the police seemed to be amused by it as well at first then.
Well, let's say the interrogation officers later thought it was rather funny. But at the time, I think the policemen kept a fairly straight face, as policemen often do.
Was Hitler was right stickers or a slogan, was that a common slogan back then in 1968 in Britain as well as America?
It's a slogan that Colin Jordan coined in, I believe it was 1962 in Trafalgar Square, together with Free Britain from Jewish Control. And Hitler was right, yes. I think that was the general idea.
And that was before you became interested in nationalism.
I was quite interested in it, but not much more than a schoolboy, just interested in this rather sensational anti-establishment movement that had been led by Colin Jordan and George Lincoln Rockwell, who was the American equivalent. They had the Cotswold camp, which was quite famous at the time. And this is, again, I believe in 1962, if I got my dates right. And Lincoln Rockwell came over from the United States in 1962. He was prohibited by the Home Secretary of the time. I don't know if I remember the name. It might have been Henry Brooke, but it was about that sort of era anyway, the name of the Home Secretary. He was prohibited from coming into Britain. But he came in through Ireland, and to the dismay, astonishment of the British authorities, he popped up in a National Socialist camp in the Cotswolds, which at the time was attended by John Tyndall and Martin Webster and various other leading lights of our dissident movement. Okay, so I was a member at the time. My father didn't want me to join anything horrible like that, so I wasn't going to disobey my father, but he knew very, very well what my sympathies were, even as a schoolboy.
So that appeared exciting to you. This was something exciting. George Lincoln Rockwell coming over. It was anti-establishment, and you're an adolescent, and of course you're finding rebellious things like that.
Yeah.
Exciting.
Exactly, and it caused a big sensation in the Daily Mirror. And I remember at the time that Rockwell came over, I had a German pen friend staying with me, and there were other. One or two other Germans. So this wasn't political. This was just something my father had raised because he knew I was interested in learning German, and I remember looking at these photographs of rather attractive young Nazis in the Daily Mirror I won't say any more, but they were admired.
Young Fräuleins.
Yes.
So we move on a few years, and you ended up joining the National Front and
1968,
and then you're off again to Germany and where this sticker ends up being put on Lenin's finger. Had you looked into Adolf Hitler by that time? Had you read
Mein Kampf? Yes, I've read Mein Kampf when I was 14.
Right. A very early age.
Well, it seemed to, although, again, I wasn't wanting to commit myself to any hardline ideology. I never have been particularly dogmatic. But I felt that what Hitler was saying in Mein Kampf fitted very well into what was happening in modern-day society.
And what about Mosley? Had you been interested in him?
Yes, I'd attended a meeting of Mosley's in Kensington Town Hall when I was an art student in 1968, 69.
So it's all about 68, 69. You're starting to join these nationalist organisations, mm-hmm. and you go on this holiday with your cousin, and your cousin's interested in this as well. And I think that organisation is the one that Harold Covington was involved in, isn't it? The National Socialist White People's Party?
Yes, it was. The leader was Matt Cole.
Heard of Matt Cole, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
George Lincoln Rockwell by that time had been assassinated.
Right. Right.
So Matt Cole took over.
But it must have been nice for you to have a cousin that was interested in similar things.
It's strange how these things happen sometimes. It's just out of the blue we find that without discussing it beforehand, that we just happen to hit the same nail on the same head.
Because you don't necessarily get family members all following the same politics.
No.
A lot of times people follow opposite politics. Well, even Jeremy Corbyn and his brother are following opposite politics, don't they?
Oh, yes. I mean, in my own family, I wouldn't say they would agree with me by any means. But it just so happened my cousin did.
So you both been arrested, but it wasn't actually you putting the stickers up, was it?
No, unfortunately, cousin. I can't claim that particular infamy.
But you went up there with his passport and you stuck with him anyway. You didn't just leave him there to face the music.
Oh, no.
Well, that's good of you. Well, what happened with the interrogation then? What happened after that?
Well, they took us to Hohenschönhausen, if I pronounced that well. No, Hohenschönhausen. And they led us into... they separated us out. They put us in like little meat vans, tiny little cells of, I think there was something like four cabinets inside a little anonymous van, which they drove us to Hohenschönhausen in, and then took us to separate cells. As I say, we didn't even see each other. We were kept separate at that point. They kept us there for a while. Put me into a cell. I presume it would be the same happened with my cousin, from what I can gather. And there was a, like any prison, there was a kind of half bed and a toilet in the corner and like a big letterbox in the door where they would pass our food through and that sort of thing. I was on my own at this time. And that was my home for the next little while.
Did they speak English when they tried to interrogate you? They had an interpreter?
Had a translator.
Right. And what was it that they were interested in? Can you remember?
They wanted my whole life story. I felt quite elevated. I felt that they wanted to know how it was that someone from the West could come up with these very strange ideas of preferring Hitler to the glorious communist system.
So that really shocked them?
I think so. They were curious. They had that kind of curiosity about it. What I will say about it is that the Germans who treated me were always very courteous. There was no sense of brutality or anything of that kind. The conditions were incredibly Spartan. We had little more to eat than bread and water. If you can call hot soup, hot water soup, you could call it soup, but it wasn't a lot more than that. Hot water, a few noodles floating in it, if you're lucky. It was that sort of thing. And so the conditions were very Spartan, but the police, I must say, always treated me with courtesy. I can think of reasons why, but that would come later.
The Germans, I think they're very courteous people.
I think that's the truth. I think we often think about Muslims, and this is a point I'd like to make in a way, where people are very anti-Muslim, quite understandably, in this country because of the atrocities. But I think in many ways, an ideology or a religion is as good as the people who run it. And if you had the Germans made the best of communism, for instance, East Germany was the most prosperous part of the whole Soviet structure, the whole Eastern Bloc. They, in fact, they were the envy and rather put the rest of the Eastern Bloc to shame because of the German natural inclination to work hard and to work efficiently and work well with one another. And so the legacy of the German spirit carried on even in communism and came out on tops.
Amazing. I wasn't aware of that before, that it was actually the East Germans that was the most prosperous part of the Soviet Union.
It was the most prosperous, yes.
Well, how long were you like this then for, in the police prison cell, it must have been?
Well, this is trying to rack my memory. We're talking about, as I say, about 43 years ago, I think. And what happened was that I was put in solitary confinement. And they, for about, I would say, for a good month, every day of the week, or maybe Sundays. Sundays, I think, was a break. I was interrogated.
A month of solitary confinement?
More or less, yes. Sorry, confinement. But it wasn't lonely because I had other people. Well, I rather had
the interrogator.
Interrogator to me too. And what they did was to ask me more or less my life story. If I could get the notes, I could probably write quite an effective biography of my life up to then, my early life. Every day they wanted to know everything about my background. And they would type it all out in the morning, and in the afternoon they would invite me back into the interrogation room, and they would go through everything we'd said in the morning. And if there was anything I disagreed with, this is where the courtesy comes in again, they would correct it. For instance, they suggested that the National Front was a National Socialist Party. No, it wasn't. It might have a lot of sympathy towards that way of thinking, but it wasn't an overtly National Socialist Party, not like Colin Jordan's party. And so they'd say, well, this is the National Socialist National Front. I said, no, it's not strictly speaking National Socialist. They didn't sort of quibble about it. Oh, we've just changed it. So everything I said, I was able to correct anything I didn't like about what they'd written in the morning. They were very fair about this.
It sounds to me like they weren't trying to catch you out. If you were arrested now, the police would be trying to get you to implicate yourselves so that they could then build a case against you. It seems to me what they were trying to do is to work out whether you were a spy or not, and how well you could describe your life, and whether when you repeated it you got it correct each time. That's what it seems to me like. Do you think they were trying to work out whether you were a spy?
I don't think they could have possibly thought I was a spy, but interestingly, they did. My first charge, or first, I was arrested under the suspicion of being a spy, and that was the first thing. Incidentally, I had the same lawyer, Dr. Fogel, who had been the representative of Gary Powers, the UT pilots who'd been shot down over the East. Some time before, as an American spy. So they did sort of take it as a high-level spying thing, although my competence as a spy would be nil.
Well, were the British authorities informed by this time Soviet Germany had got this British tourist with his Hitler stickers?
Definitely,
young
yes.
Lad with his stickers?
Yes. Yes, the British Embassy was informed, and there was a go-between by the name of Dr. Stanger, I seem to remember, who was the and Dr. Fogel, who was the my lawyer who represented me eventually in court, who'd been probably the highest level lawyer in East Germany for this particular sort of case, even though mine was very low-key. I would say low-key, poor relation to any serious spy. They were using the top-level lawyer.
Right, so had you actually had any contact with the British authorities by this time, or were you still in your solitary confinement after a month?
I had no contact, no direct contact. Remember that Britain hadn't recognised East Germany at the time. We were still, East Germany wasn't recognised as the Democratic Party, Party of Democratic Republic of East Germany at the time. It was just East German zone, because we didn't have diplomatic relations with East Germany. We had to make all our representations through the, through the West German embassy, I think, who had some sort of connection with the East German, but we certainly didn't have a separate East German embassy at the time.
Did that go for the whole of the USSR? No diplomatic relations with them?
Oh, no,
was this a particular case?
The USSR had relations.
It was East Germany.
Because of, if you remember, going back to the time of the German blockade, I think, I don't know, I can't remember the date, but there was a time when East Germany was blocked off, and it was never recognised until after I'd left East Germany in around about 71, I think they actually recognised.
After the war, there was a Soviet zone, there was an American zone, there was a British zone. Is that right?
Yes.
And the Soviets just kept hold of that zone.
That's right.
That was what I thought happened. They just kept hold of that zone right up until the wall came down.
That's right, yes.
So I was just wondering why they weren't recognising them when it had been agreed by the three powers that Soviet Russia was going to have that part of Germany.
It was recognised before the wall came down. The wall didn't come down to... Whenever, when was it?
1980-something, maybe 1986, 87.
So I think there was some sort of recognition for at least 10 years before that. I think there was a recognition shortly after I left.
Right.
I think some of the reason that I was treated worked comparatively well was that the East Germans did want recognition. And they didn't want to be seen as brutalising prisoners,
right?
In the West.
Right. Well. So you've been interrogated for a month. You've been in your solitary confinement, and what happened after that? Were you taken to a trial?
Taken for a trial. First time I'd seen my cousin in that time. We were handcuffed, taken into a court. There was a lady judge. Seem to remember quite an attractive lady judge who I was represented by Dr. Fogel, who was appointed as a kind of defence lawyer for me, and his argument was that I think they were asking 2 years for me and something like 2 years or just over 2 years, maybe 2.5 years for my cousin. And he argued that I should get less than 2 years because I wasn't as involved as my cousin. So in the end, my cousin got 2 years and I got 15 months. But because of good behaviour, so-called, we didn't always behave ourselves, had a bit of fun actually. Pretty excited, because we hadn't done anything further or obvious that they knew about anyway, they let me out after 10 months.
And what was the charges that they actually charged you with?
Well, it started off with a spying charge, but it was called Staatsfeindlicher Hechter, which means hateful anti-state propaganda.
Hateful. So they use the word hate.
They talk just as they do now in our benighted British situation. You know, United Kingdom. They talk about hate thought, hate speech. They talked about hate crime then.
So wow.
It was Hechter. Start means state. Feindlicher means enemy, and Hechter means hate. So it's a hatred against the state.
Hatred against the state.
Mm.
So you've got a direct link there.
Or enemy against the enemy of the state.
This word hate that they keep using wrong thing. So you got 15 months. Were you put in the same prison as your cousin?
No, we didn't see anything except of each other except when we were both handcuffed and taken into the court. We were given the suits as well. Because we didn't have we'd had our prison uniform, which was sort of like a heavy flannel jacket with a big yellow stripe down the trousers and stripe down the side.
I didn't have the pointy arrows on it.
Not pointy arrows, just a yellow, big yellow stripe. Yellow not stripe. Unmistakable though.
Wow. So what was it like once you were in the prison then?
In the prison, well, And so they gave me books to read in the interior. Well, I was... Oh, after the...
About in English? In English? They were in English, were they?
Well, yes. After about a month of interrogation, before I came to the court, to the trial, they didn't know what to do with me, so they gave me books to read. And there were about 20 books published by something called the Seven Seas Publishing Company. And they... And that was sort of like any communist writer who couldn't get his books published in England or America would get them published in East Germany just because he's a communist and could write just about right. But if some of the books were quite good, there was one writer called Stefan Heim, who was, I think, quite well known as an East German writer. He wrote in English as well. And so there were about 20 books, as I say. I remember I read each book twice over because I had... ran out of other books to read.
And had you been able to have any contact with your family by this time?
By letter, yes.
By letter?
Yes.
So you were able to receive letters from home? But
yes, I was able to give one or two, but I wasn't able to receive one or two, and I was able to send one or two, but a lot were held back from me.
So you weren't allowed a phone call?
Oh, goodness, no. My parents did visit me there.
They came to visit you?
Mm. And my mother bent down and knocked a picture of Herr Ulbricht, Herr Ulbricht being the president of East Germany at the time. And so Herr Bottom knocked the picture, and she was afraid she might get arrested for banging the picture of Herr Ulbricht with Herr Bottom, but she wasn't. but I always remember there's a little phrase, a little poem, which I was told subsequently by one of the other prisoners, about Herr Ulbricht. Now, he was a fairly portly man with a little pointed beard, a bit one like the one I'm wearing now. And and he said that he had this little poem, Spitzbart, that means pointed beard, Bauch, his fat tummy, and Brille, glasses, bei uns nicht Villa, means we don't want her, we don't want Walter Ulbricht with... And he got 10 months for that.
Just for his naughty little poem.
For his naughty little poem, I think he said it in a pub when he was drunk or something. But that's the sort of thing that happened.
It's the same thing now, isn't it? You criticise the certain people, and you can be arrested for that as well.
Yes,
you're criticising certain ethnic minorities, and that's directly criticising the prime minister or whatever it was at the time.
Mm.
That could get you out, and we're not that far off from that now, I wouldn't have thought. But so did you have a problem conversing with people? You've been there for a month by this time. Had you picked up any German? Was anyone speaking English when you were in the prison? Or
yes, I had two, after I'd finished the interrogation, I had two companions who would then come in and share the cell with me for...
Were they English speaking?
No, one was called Heinz. Another whose name I forget for now, Heinz was a businessman, and the other one was a little bit just ordinary worker type. I don't know. I think he was the one who said Spitzbart, Bauch, and Brille bei uns nicht Villa, and got arrested for that.
And this was in the prison once you'd been sentenced. This is while you're still being interrogated.
While I'm waiting, so they've got
the police cells, and they put two other German speaking prisoners
just to keep me company. Yes,
even though they didn't speak your language.
No, but I mean it was quite interesting because it enabled me to learn what we call Knastdeutsch, which means prison German. So I didn't learn Hochdeutsch, but I learned Knastdeutsch, which was the sort of rough and ready you might learn from crooks and criminals and people who don't like the president.
Yeah, I guess because you're all the same race, you're going to have the same body language, the same common courtesy. I mean, you're not going to be doing the opposite of what would be considered polite behaviour.
Oh, no,
Germans,
no.
As you would get with some of the other races, if you were in a room with them and you didn't speak their language, you know, fairly, you might offend them, and they might attack you when you're just trying to be polite to them.
Oh well, thereby hangs a yarn, but that comes later. But at this point, until I was actually sentenced, while I was still in limbo waiting to be sentenced, then I had these two companions, not altogether. There was a time when I didn't have anyone there, but there was a time when I was in limbo, and then I had the two companions, and then we used to have what was called Freistunde, which literally meant, a free hour, and it meant that we could go out and walk around the quadrangle and to get a bit of fresh air, you know, but that was the only exercise we got at time. There would, we were in a quite small quadrangle, like a size of a house without windows, if you can imagine, and there were guards walking up around the top of the top with armed guards looking down at you as you're walking, as you would be walking around in circles. They'd be walking around in circles above you, looking down with their submachine guns.
That must
guns.
Have been quite intimidating.
No.
No, coming from Britain, where we don't even have policemen with guns, and suddenly you're in a prison there with the guards with submachine guns patrolling around on the...
Yeah, well, I just thought it was fun. It was like something out of a film.
All a bit of excitement.
Well, it was. Yes, I mean, I was 25, I think, at the time, you know. Thought, well, you've got to live sometime.
So how was life in the prison then? Did you have a cell to yourself once you'd been found?
I had a cell to myself, and then I shared with another chap. And then we were on two consecutive occasions. I can't remember how long it was. So I must have been in the interrogation prison for 5 months altogether.
5 months in being interrogated? I was thinking it was just a month. 5 months?
No, a month for interrogation, but four of those months would have been
held, right,
in just solitary. But they let me out, and I don't mean let me out, but they allowed me to
give a bit of exercise.
Yeah, so around in circles where they look down at me with guns.
With the guns.
Yeah. Anyway, after that sentence, I was taken to a working prison. Same sort of thing, but except that I'd be with lots of other people.
What sort of work were you doing? I imagine smashing blocks with a hammer in the gulag, but it wasn't quite like that, was it?
No, nothing quite so strenuous. What we had was filing down car parks. Is it the Trabants? I can't remember. The Trabants was the East German car.
Yeah.
The only one they ever made. And they'd be given these parts from the car which come out of the mould, and we'd have to file them down so they could then be put into the car and constructed into cars. That was But you've got very sore hands doing that. I think we had gloves, but even so, you got very hands ended up very sore. So they were kind enough to let me do something else, put me on a machine where I was making magnetic spools. So and it was much easier. You weren't under quite so much pressure, just to make little magnetic spools, sort of things that go in fridge doors or whatever to make the fridge shut properly.
And was that part of the Trabant as well? Or was that?
No, I think else? This would have been another thing. It might have been to do with the Trabant, but because I no one explained to me quite what it was. But at that time, I mean, we were working with each other. We got up at something like 4:30 in the morning and finished at 2:30 in the afternoon. So it was quite a sort of lopsided day, you know. We'd done all our work by the mid-afternoon. We'd have something to eat and go back to the cells, which would be up to 8 people in the cell then.
Right, so you didn't have a cell to yourself once you were in the prison. 8 of you sharing a room.
Well, 6 would be 6. Fairly average, but some would be 8.
And none of them speaking English?
No, but... that didn't matter, because by that time I picked up enough German to, as one of them explained to me, I said, "What's my German like?" And I can't. And he said, "Well, it's a bit like a 3 or 4 year old." I thought, "Well, I'm getting there."
So, what did you get up to with the prisoners? Were you playing in games or
yes?
What sort of game? How did you pass the time?
Well, we used to get bits of toilet paper, make them into squares, and stick them with soap onto the tabletop.
Dew soap?
Sorry?
Jew soap?
Yeah, we use soap.
Is it made out of Jews?
I didn't ask about that. I thought it might be in bad taste, yes. But no, we used to make little checkboards and play chess and drafts and things like that. Just using quite simple like that. And but one of the highlights we to play blind man's buff. Now, if you've got eight people in a smallish cell playing blind man's buff, one of them's blinded and has to grab someone. I mean, as soon as he's managed to hold someone down, that person becomes the blind man and he has to chase everyone else. And we used to do this quite often when the guards weren't around too much. And, yes. And it ended up in one or two... It wasn't much in our cell, but others, they wrecked the cell and the whole lot were put in an underground, what used to be called a rest. And so not only were you in prison, but you were put in an underground cell for about 2 weeks. So they separated. So if you did anything too serious, you could get into that effect.
No, not very nice.
No, no. I also remember getting into a fight with another prisoner. It's a bit personal, but I may as well say it. You had to do your toilet business in the corner, in a WC, all right? Well, yeah. One night I went into the I decided to use the toilet, and one of the other prisoners made it. Farting noises, which incensed me, so I picked up a big dirty mop and threw it at him, and it landed on his head full of muck from the floor. Say no more.
Ooh.
In which case he came storming over and we had a fight in the cell, and I didn't think much more of it. He didn't get, I don't know if he was seriously injured. It was more sort of, you know, don't let's go any further than this, or you get the worst of it, sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it ended up with a kind of fight. And the next day, he had the audacity to report me to the police, saying that I caused him that I'd thrown this dirty mop at him. But instead of the policeman taking his side, he took my side. And he got into trouble for I don't know why, because the policeman didn't ask me what I'd done. I wasn't going to say what I'd done, what he'd done rather. I think the other police prisoners all chipped in and told the police officer what it was. But anyway, it was. I also remember telling the son of an SS officer, he was in prison too, that he was a Schweinhund. And I think I just escaped narrowly with my life. he walked up to me and I think it was just a sort of touch ago where he's going to knock my head through the wall. But because he was much bigger than I.
why did you call him that?
Oh, he'd been aggravating me. I mean, we've been on the whole, it was just... I don't know why you just got into silly arguments. Well, not about anything really serious, I suppose. Just maybe I just called him Schweinhund because I wanted to see how he reacted. It might not have been more than that. Fortunately, he didn't react as much as he might have done.
Yeah.
So I think he'd have got the better of me by far.
So how long were you in there then?
I was in the East German working prison for 5 months. And so every day I was either to start with filing bits of cars inside of cars so they could be put together after they come out of the mould, or else on this electrical spool, this electrical magnet thing we made on a machine.
You're in there for 5 months and you're expecting to do 15 months. So what happened after the 5 months that you've been in there?
Sackenpacken. And that was the German word for pack your sacks, you're going. So one day I was just told Sackenpacken. The others all went off to work, and I had to Sackenpacken my sack. And they took me out of East Germany. My lawyer, who had Dr. Fogel, I say the famous Gary Powers lawyer, drove me through Checkpoint Charlie. They just saluted him. They didn't even stop the car or ask for papers or anything like that. It was just, they knew him, vroomp. And off I went to the British Embassy. And when I was in the British Embassy, someone who looked rather suspiciously to me, like James Bond, came along and asked me a few questions and then disappeared. I was treated to a very nice lunch. I think they were a bit, I picked up one or two, what would perhaps it be called, neo-Nazi newspapers, Nationale Zeitung, which was a nationalist paper. And I they looked at me a bit askance, but I thought, no, I'm free now. I don't care what the...
This was in the embassy?
This is the embassy, yes.
They had a selection of papers.
Well, no, I picked them up and I bought one somehow or other. I can't remember circumstances. I had lunch with the ambassador or the consul. And then they took me to the airport. I think it was, is it Tegon? Not Tempelhof. I know it wasn't Tempelhof.
So there wasn't any debriefing or anything like that?
Well, say this chap who looks a bit like James Bond came and asked me a few questions.
That was it?
That was it, yes. I explained that conditions were getting a bit worse there, in that they were blocking out some of our daylight in the cells, and that we couldn't see out through the bars any longer because they're putting sort of metal sheets over that, and I think things were getting a little bit tighter.
So they were concerned about the human rights issues with the Soviets. That's the sort of thing that the embassy would have been interested in, was the treatment of prisoners.
Well, they weren't. There's not much they could do. I mean, we didn't even that time have, let's say, diplomatic relations properly. I think it was just at about that point that I was released in 71 that the...
71, so you've been there for 2 years. You've sort of gone off on your German holiday and then been stuck in this East German prison for nearly 2 years.
No, ten months.
10 months. Ten months is it?
Not 2 years old.
I thought you were there for a year and a half. You said you came back then in 1971. Probably getting confused.
No, I was arrested in 70, in July 70.
Right.
I released it on May the 20th. In 71.
So you had 10 months in there?
10 months, yes. I had in fact been to Germany before. That's where it was confusion.
Right.
I've been to Germany before on various things. In 1962, for instance, as a German pen friend and other various things.
And what happened when you came back to Britain? Was there any interest in your story? Had the British people heard about this British lad that had been kidnapped and arrested and stuck in prison in Berlin?
Yes.
For his hijinks?
Yes, here I have some papers. Headline news. Holiday abroad ended in communist jail is one headline here. Telegraph, The Sun, that they all had run evening standards.
So the newspapers have been running stories on you while you've been in
no,
there?
Not particularly, anyway. Only after I came back did they seem to say very much. But they were all quite sympathetic, not nowadays where I'd be an evil Nazi. In those days, it was because of the Cold War, anyone who was against the Soviet system wasn't thought of as automatically evil. Nowadays, the balance has changed somewhat.
Well, I can say, you can see that the tone is sympathetic, just from reading a few brief bits. Like there, it says, it was only a joke. But they took it seriously. Can you imagine them saying that today about people putting Hitler was right? I mean, they went wild about a banner saying Hitler was right.
Yeah.
When National Action did that, they went absolutely wild about it. And they pulled the video, and people should be arrested for saying this, and is this banner legal? And back then, they're reporting it as it was only a joke, but the Soviets took it seriously.
Mm.
It's a complete turnaround, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. When we talk about the difference, they say that the past is a foreign country, isn't it? And 43 years ago was quite different from the way it is now.
Yeah, definitely. So did they actually come round and interview you?
Oh, yes. Probably.
The papers did?
Yes.
And what were you doing before that? Were you teaching before you went abroad?
No.
On this holiday?
No, I missed a year's teaching because I just qualified. I found out I'd qualified as a teacher while I was in East Germany. One of the guards brought me a list to show me that I'd passed. Just brought me to, and he looked quite pleased for me. Anyway, when I came back, I found out I knew I'd qualified. So it just meant I had to wait another year before I could to do the rounds and apply for a job, which I did quite successfully for many years afterwards. It didn't stymie my career at all.
It didn't affect it in any way?
Not really, no.
Did any of your pupils ever find out about it? Did you tell them about it?
I never thought it was a good idea to discuss it. I thought it was all a bit mad. But I never hid my politics either. I mean, I was quite well known at school as a National Front teacher.
Very different to today, then.
Well, I mean, Andrew Bronze, likewise, he was well known as the National Front, not just a teacher or a National Front member, but as, I think, a leader at one stage. Didn't stop him from doing well. I think we have to stand up against this kind of intimidation. And the only way to beat it is, in fact, to show that we're honest, decent people and not going to be cowed by pressure from the enemy.
I think you showed remarkable resolve just to handle all of this and not freak out and not call for help from the embassy and just to put up with it and take every. I think, you know, you took everything in your stride, didn't you?
Yes.
Just thought, well, there isn't anything I can do about it, so I'll just make the most of it while I'm here.
That's right, yeah.
And wait till it's over and done with.
What else can you do?
I guess. And has there been any other mentions of it since in the time that you've been out? Was there, did it ever come up again at all at any moments?
Not really. Not this particular episode in my life. Certainly I've been strange circumstances where in my professional life, but I've always managed to ride the storm. For instance, years later, the News of the World ran a story about me as a nasty Nazi teacher, but that wasn't to do with this case.
It's just because you were a nationalist.
They'd
attack you like that.
Yes.
Yeah, that's getting closer to modern times now, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, unfortunately.
Did you ever see your cousin again?
Yes, I saw him a few years ago.
Yes. A few years ago, but not at the time, not at the actual time when he was in
prison. I was released after 15 months, and he came out after 2 years, so he did come back and join me at my parents' house on his way back to America.
And did he do the full 2 years?
No, he
knocked off as well.
Well, I think his sentence was something like 2.5 years, and he did, so he got some kind of remission.
So he was okay as well. So it all ended well then.
Yeah. So.
And it was an experience.
It was an experience. I mean, I did have one or two health issues for a while, because of the poor diet. But I did, you know, young and resilient. You don't worry too much about that.
And if you think back then, you're putting stickers up, and the Soviets are arresting you for years for putting stickers up.
Mm.
Did you ever think that Britain would ever get like that, where you could run the risk of being sentenced to jail for 2 to 4 years for putting stickers up? Same stickers, or very similar stickers, just saying things like Hitler was right.
No, no.
I bet that thought never crossed your mind, that anything like that could ever happen to Britain.
No, no. I mean, Britain, as we said at the time, Britain's a free country.
Would that it were, would that it were, or would that it is.
Well, there we are. There's a big question mark.
There is. Okay, thanks, Michael. I've really enjoyed that. I think our listeners are going to enjoy that too.
Okay, good. Thank you.
If you're sick of hearing the anti-white message, then you've come to the right place. You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.